From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the life and writing of Larry McMurtry and how he refined the myths of being Texan.
The Texas that he wrote about was the Texas that people see out there. I mean, the dying towns, the cowboys on the range.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies.
Hey, Andy.
Yeah, it's a wonder somebody don't steal the town.
Hey, where is everybody?
Sleep. Everybody's got any sense.
Well, why'd Sam close the cafe?
Oh, yeah, y'all been gone, ain't you? You don't know about it.
About what?
Sam died yesterday morning.
Died?
Yep, quite a blow. Killed over one of the snooker tables. Had a stroke.
Sam the Lion?
Yep. Sam's dead. He was quite a feller.
In 1971, the film The Last Picture Show became an instant classic. Based on the book by Larry McMurtry, it told the story of a Texas town withering in 1951. The film was shot in McMurtry's hometown of Archer City, which was fitting given the autobiographical nature of the book, and then Into the Future, it was where McMurtry opened his legendary bookstore. McMurtry's take on rural Texas redefined the popular view of the state and the Western and made him one of the most celebrated writers of the 20th century. When he died in 2021, McMurtry had published 40 books, won a Pulitzer for Lonesome Dove, and an Oscar for his co-written adaptation of Brokeback Mountain. David Streitfeld has written a biography of his friend McMurtry, Western star, The Life and Legends of Larry McMurtry.
Well, Larry was a difficult person to get to know, and we bonded over books, over the physical object of books. Larry was, for 50 years or so, a book scout, meaning he went around the country, wherever he was, and hunted out books in bookstores, just as a kind of treasure hunt. And I was the same way. We were both readers, but this is a separate thing. We were looking for books for whatever deep-rooted psychological reasons we felt we had to pile them up. And so that's what enabled us to get to know each other back in the 1990s. I was a reporter for the Washington Post. Larry spent time in Washington when he wasn't in Texas. And I wanted to write about him. He said no. And so I visited his store and bought a whole bunch of books. And there were books I wanted, but the mere fact that I bought them caught his attention. He wrote me a letter after my article appeared, gently critiquing some of the things I said, and we went on from there. It was an unusual friendship, but a real one.
Many people will know the name Larry McMurtry as the author of books that take on Texas, talk about Texas. And Lonesome Dove, of course, a lot of people know that. Last Picture Show, so many other books that he wrote. Talk about his relationship with Texas.
The key to Larry's relationship with Texas and what allowed him to write his books, most of them, most of the important ones, the best ones, set in Texas or about Texas, was his deep feeling of ambivalence about the state. He loved it, he hated it. And he could never quite resolve those two feelings. He would go to Texas as an adult, desperate to be there, saying, I need to get back to Texas. I need to get back to my books. I need to get back to that big sky. And then inevitably, after a day, two, a week at the most, reality would set in and he'd be like, I gotta get out of here. I gotta go to Los Angeles. I gotta go to Washington, anywhere but Texas. And he went on like this for about 50 years. And if he had really hated it, as you know, a lot of sensitive youth growing up somewhere in a small town decide they hate the place and then they get out of it and they never go there again. He probably wouldn't have written any books if he felt that way, or maybe one book talking about how he hated it. And if he loved it, maybe he still would have written books, but they probably wouldn't have been that good or wouldn't have been that interesting, or no one would have read them outside of Texas. Larry just could not decide and did not want to decide what his true feeling about Texas was, and kind of, I was going to say, reveled, maybe wallowed in his ambivalence.
Was he, more focused on Texas or Texans?
Well, according to him, he never thought about Texas at all, which I thought was his way of just avoiding it. I don't think he really distinguished between the two. He wrote about Texas, he wrote about historical Texas, he wrote about contemporary Texas, and they were filled with Texans. So, I mean, it all his feelings about Texas went back to his family, his, I guess, ancestors, we could call them, who came to Texas in the 1880s. And they were up in the panhandle, many of them. There were 12 brothers and sisters, and nearly all of them were cowboys. And Larry didn't know them very well, but he admired them. Their exploits or their spirit forms the basis of Lonesome Dove. And so that was a large part of his love for Texas, that he had family there and he admired his family. But then the less enthusiastic parts of his feelings came from just living there. He had a great deal of trouble with the food. He was a literary person. He was an educated, cultured person and thought that Texas should be much more cultured and was disappointed that it was not. He was also, frankly, a liberal living in rural Texas and did not quite fit in there either.
What do you mean the food? What did he like about the food?
Just about everything. He felt that, especially in later life, it wasn't good for him. And again, his favorite place to eat in Texas, he always said, whenever anybody asked him, was in Ponder, right near Denton, where there was an old-fashioned steakhouse and serving traditional food. So he did love the food, but in Archer City, his hometown, he felt there was literally nothing to eat. And to some extent, he was right. The gas stations there serve food in the Texas tradition, but Larry did not consider that food. So he would actually, when he was living in Archer City, he would drive down to Fort Worth and eat dinner at a good restaurant there and spend the night there and then drive back to Archer City, 100 miles or more, the next day. And even he felt that was a little weird that he was driving 200 miles, 250 miles round trip just to eat dinner.
My theory of a literary analysis is that the first book that you write and you publish and you've worked on and you get it out there is kind of the Rosetta Stone of everything that comes after. Basically, they say you really only have one book inside you and you just write it over and over again in different ways. And his first book, 1961, Horsemen Pass By, that came out as a film. It's Hud with Paul Newman in 1963. It's one of my favorite movies. So let's talk about that story and that book. It is a new take on what it means to be a man in the Texas and being a rancher in Texas. A take on rejecting the code of conduct that of the Old West and a more sort of despicable individual who is out for himself, which is the character of Hud. Do you see it that way?
I can say first that I agree with your take that a writer's first book is often the book they were born to write, and everything that comes later is just commentary on it and often not as good. That's true of many, many writers. I'm not sure it's true of Larry. I think Horseman Pass By, is a good book. I wouldn't say it's a great book. I think HUD is a great movie, but HUD is somewhat different, not completely different, but somewhat different than the book. And Larry was not a fan of the book. He thought it was a beginner's effort and just not very good. And frankly, he wasn't much of a fan of the movie either. Not because they changed the book, but because they didn't change the book enough. But I do agree that the book presents a view of Texas, an unsentimental view of ranch life in Texas that was new and fresh. And it does illustrate how throughout his career, Larry did not give readers exactly what they wanted. If they wanted inspiring stories of Texas without any shadows at all, he wasn't going to give them that because he didn't believe that's what Texas was.
He was not Louis L'Amour writing out these dime Western novels of gunslingers and things. So in 1966, The Last Picture Show is his next book. It's his third book. This is an iconic story. You can't drive across Texas as I do when I'm go cover stories and go through these small towns and not think about The Last Picture Show. Maybe you could say this was actually his first really actualized book, even though it was his third, and how it minted a story that still resonates today.
I think it's a story that resonates today and that, frankly, is probably more timely today than it's been at points in the past. This whole question of rural America and how the people there feel and what their attitude is toward the big cities, without going all political on you, has clearly become a prominent story, both in Texas and everywhere in the country. And it is an important book. And I think, in my mind at least, it blends in with the movie, which is a perfect movie in many ways. And it does, between the two of them, I go back and forth between the book and the movie and try not to, don't really distinguish between them. They do capture the problems and maybe the some of the pleasures, a few of the pleasures of small town life in Texas in 1950 or 1970 or maybe even today.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. Davis Streifeld is the author of Western Star: The Life and Legends of Larry McMurtry. When I think about the movie, I think about the closing of the movie house. If you're living in a place like Archer City or this town, and they closed the movie house, that was the only place where you actually had contact with the outside world. The closing of the movie house was basically you were going to be even more isolated. It was less, I mean, it was also about the closing of this important function in the town and showing that the town was dying and the center for your social life that was going away. But it says a lot about a town when you lose your movie house.
I think that's true, although again, the ambivalence, the contradiction that's in a lot of Larry's work, I also find here, by which I mean when he was writing the book in the mid-1960s, television had come in, and in some ways the people in Archer City were more connected to the outside world than they ever had been. The movie theater, you know, was one thing and it showed a newsreel, but television was there all the time, was on all the time. So, you know, the young people could see a different world, and maybe that's increased their unhappiness, or maybe it gave them literally a way to get out of town. There's some artistic mystery at the bottom of this that I can't quite solve. And I think that's what gives the book and the movie their power.
I mean, it does take on the Texas myth of a small town community, exposes the loneliness that you have there. Instead of a romance and frontier swagger and confidence, McMurtry shows the readers boredom, sexual confusion, emotional hunger, this bleakness of a place that feels trapped.
Right. I think that's true. Although, you know, Larry, like many artistic youth in a small town, did not have a good childhood. And he was, I think, the only student in his graduating class in high school who did not play football. There might have been one other two. It's a little ambiguous, but he was definitely one of the few. And in a small Texas town, that really marks you out. And so I'm sure he was unhappy and didn't have a girlfriend. So in the novel, he reverses it. And everybody in the novel, and for that matter, the movie, it's like having sex all the time. And I don't think that's really the way it was in Archer City when Larry was a teenager, but this is kind of his vengeance on the town. It's, you know, in some ways it's a cartoon, but his novelistic impulse, his feelings for humanity did overcome him, and it's not just a satire, which saves the book and the movie. There's a great deal of sympathy for everyone involved.
Is he working out his feelings on the page?
Yes, and not only was he working out his feelings, but it was completely unconscious. Larry's way of writing for his entire life was to basically sit down early in the morning and start typing. He didn't know what was going to happen. He didn't know what the characters were going to say. He literally was like taking dictation from a muse. So he was working it all out, but it was all completely unconscious, which, you know, probably was all the better for that.
The Western story before Larry McMurtry was a lot simpler. And it was more of a straight-up morality play, you know, where you had people like Gene Autry, Roy Rogers. But he introduced more complex moral questions to what it's like to be a man in the West. And the toughness that required to be a man meant also being emotionally isolated, emotionally limited, and frequently out of step with the world around him. Was that a deliberate thing?
I don't think it was deliberate. As I was just saying, all of his writing was unconscious, but I do think it was intentional. I mean, again, this is where the lifelong ambivalence comes in. Larry liked the people, many of the people, starting with his relatives, living in the West. But he did think that the conquest of the West was a long, brutal, sad story. I mean, it involved, in Texas, you had the Mexicans fighting the Anglos, fighting the Native Americans. It was a three-way battle for dominance, and it was very bloody, and a lot of tragedies happened along the way. And he really, you know, he was not in favor of that. He did not find anything heroic in it. And yet, He liked the people. He, did not want to denounce everybody in Texas history as whatever, an imperialist or a warmonger or whatever, because that would be his family. And he knew his family wasn't that way. Yet the facts of Texas history did not, were not a happy story, to put it mildly. So again, this is a contradiction he couldn't resolve. And it plays out in Lonesome Dove, where the two heroes, Gus and Call, are retired Texas Rangers who feel they fought on the wrong side, as they famously say, that they fought to make the West safe for whatever, bankers and real estate people. And Larry was not thrilled by that development either. I mean, the West, he said, it was becoming a subsidiary, a suburb of Kansas City. And that, was not an ideal destiny in his point of view, but he didn't really have any idea for how it should have been different, how it should have been, I don't know, a happier place. He was confused. He was conflicted.
What is the key to the greatness of Lonesome Dove?
It is a great novel, and I think Larry, as writers sometimes do, just got lucky or was in the zone, as sports people say, and the moment came together, and he wrote this book in this novel in fits and starts. He wrote it really over 7 or 8 years, and he would get bored, he said, and put it down and think he was never going to go back. So it looks like a novel that was a lot of trouble, or it was a novel that was a lot of trouble to him, but it doesn't read that way. Readers just fall into it, and they always say, well, it was 900 pages, and I've never read anything that long, but once I started, I couldn't stop. So he just fell into it, and it all came out as one piece. I think that's one thing that people respond to, that the way it's written, the stories that told from their point of view is perfect. And then I also, it touches on things. The novel is about things that people have a hard time finding answers to these days. For instance, it's really about male friendship. And Larry famously did not have any male friends for most of his life. All of his friends were women. And so, again, in one, some contradiction, I guess, his great novel is about male friendship. And at the end of the novel, I don't think I'm giving anything away by this point, Call takes his best friend Gus's body back to Texas. And it's a 2,000-mile journey, and it becomes famous all over the West that, who is this nut who is carrying his friend's body back to Texas? And I don't know. I mean, I would have to think a while if I have any friends who would do that sort of thing for me. But it's nice to read about in a novel how friends do that sort of thing for each other, because it's not something we're told in this culture that men do for each other, these large, painful gestures for those we love. Anyway, I think that is a large source of the appeal of the book, that it reassures readers, or it teaches readers, that I don't know, their emotions, their feelings, there's respect for others that they can aspire to.
Was Larry concerned, or was he involved? Would he pay attention to the creation of a Texas myth of what a Texan should be?
No, he always said that he never thought about that at all. And he critiqued the myth, and there's an early book, his first collection of nonfiction, In a Narrow Grave, where he talks about the myths of Texas as conveyed by the movies and by the culture at large. And it's really entertaining, smart, instructive material. But then he dropped doing it as nonfiction and just wrote about the Texas that he wanted to write about. The Texas that he wrote about was the Texas that people see out there. I mean, the dying towns, the cowboys on the range, the rural people coming to the cities and keeping their ranch ways. All of these were things Larry wrote about, but he was not intentionally trying to create a myth or create some larger story. He just did it anyway.
So he was critical of J. Frank Dobie and how he wrote about Texas, which I found to be unfair, because that's like a expert knife smith putting down the work of a Clovis hand axe.
I think it was unfair, but I think it was rooted in more personal reasons than literary critical reasons. I mean, Larry's father really liked Dobie, and Dobie might have been the only, Dobie's books were the only books that Larry's father read. And I'm sure if Larry's father ever ventured an opinion on Larry's writing, it would have been, why can't you write more like Frank Dobie? So in some sense, by attacking Dobie, Larry is settling scores as young men or young writers at least do with their fathers. So it's not, Larry would always say, no one's going to read Dobie anymore. And his books are like almost completely gone from our cultural consciousness. I found 50 years later that, first of all, people are still reading Dobie. And second of all, he's still pretty good.
So, to that point about how Frank would talk about to that point about how Larry McMurtry would talk about things, he had three memoirs, and personal essays, all sorts of takes that he had on life, and it does seem like he would color things and be fuzzy on facts, and that's why we need a biography.
It's one reason. A biography sets writers in context, and to the extent that it's possible, they tell the quote unquote real story. And I think Larry, I didn't find anything in my research to indicate that he was less than an admirable person. And so my goal is to illuminate the books and encourage the reading of Larry McMurtry, and for that matter, encourage people to read more about Texas. It's a, I say this as an outsider, it's a fascinating state that is more consumed with its history than I think any other state. And the more books that can contribute to that and analyze that, the better.
David Streitfeld has written a biography of Texas writer Larry McMurtry, Western Star, The Life and Legends of Larry McMurtry. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. You can find Texas Matters wherever you get cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.